So, einen wunderschönen guten Tag, meine Damen und Herren. Ich darf Sie recht herzlich willkommen heißen zu der Pressekonferenz Current Anti-Semitism in Germany and Europe, organisiert vom Simon Wiesenthal Center und vom Mid-East Freedom Forum Berlin. Bevor Rabbi Cooper noch einige Worte auf Englisch zu Ihnen sprechen wird, darf ich einige Sätze vorneweg als Einleitung auf Deutsch sprechen. Ich muss mich entschuldigen, Herr Shimon Samuel will sich entschuldigen. Er hat es leider nicht geschafft, er musste dringend wegen einem Notfall abreisen, aber die Kompetenz sitzt hier geballt neben mir. Herr Rabbi Abraham Cooper wird Ihre Fragen auch hoffentlich zu Genüge beantworten, auch eine Präsentation für Sie bereithalten. Mein Name ist Michael Spanay, ich bin Direktor des Mid-East Freedom Forum Berlins und angesichts der dramatischen Eruptionen blanken Judenhasses in Europa während der israelischen Militäroperation Schutzlinie möchte das Mid-East Freedom Forum Berlin Sie auf einige Aspekte dieses Antisemitismus in Deutschland hier hinweisen. Als das israelische Militär Ende Juni nach der Ermordung von 3 jüdischen Jugendlichen und einem tagelangen Raketenbeschuss der Hamas die Operation Protective Edge begann, explodierte auf deutschen und europäischen Straßen die antisemitische Gewalt. Juden wurden auf offener Straße zusammengeschlagen, Synagogen angegriffen und die sogenannten Friedensdemonstrationen waren Paraden des antisemitischen Hasses. Mit diesen Ereignissen wurde für eine breite Öffentlichkeit sichtbar, was bisher kaum Aufmerksamkeit gefunden hat. Dass sich in bestimmten Milieus ein Judenhass etabliert hat, der dem in der Neonazi-Szene in nichts nachsteht. Ebenso wurde damit offenbar, was seit Jahren Realität ist, dass es eine Gefahr für die körperliche Unversehrtheit darstellt, in mehrheitlich muslimisch geprägten Stadtteilen deutscher Großstädte als Jude erkennbar zu sein. Qualitativ neu daran war das Ausmaß des Judenhasses, der anscheinend durch keine Tabus mehr gefiltert werden kann. Qualitativ neu ist auch die explosive Gewaltbereitschaft, die Gewalt gegen Träger von Kippas und von Davidsternen und die versuchten Übergriffe auf Pro-Israel-Demonstranten. Weniger neu, aber in seiner Drastik nun für jeden sichtbar, war der israelbezogene Antisemitismus dieser Demonstranten. Der Antisemitismus in Deutschland im Sommer 2014 war ein israelbezogener Antisemitismus. Der Anlass für die schlimmsten antisemitischen Ausfälle seit Jahrzehnten, für Juden ins Gas rufe und für Brandanschläge auf Synagogen war eine Verteidigungsoperation Israels. Es wurde offensichtlich, die antisemitischen Demonstranten differenzieren nicht zwischen Judentum und Israel. Es wurde offensichtlich, dass das Wort Israel oder der Zionismus nur eine Chiffre ist für die Juden und jederzeit damit austauschbar in deren Augen. Die Schlussfolgerung daraus kann nur lauten, dass man diese aktuelle Ausformung des Antisemitismus endlich zur Kenntnis nehmen sollte. Diese Antisemiten unterscheiden nicht zwischen Israelis und den Juden, genauso wie die Hamas-Charta bezüglich der Ausrottung der Juden eine offene Sprache spricht. Wer verhindern will, dass die Situation eskaliert oder dass Bildungsprogramme etwas nützen in Zukunft, muss diesem gewandelten Antisemitismus entgegentreten und klar benennen, dass Israel oder der Zionismus nur als Chiffre benutzt werden. Derjenige, der dies verhindern will, muss den Antisemitismus der Hamas-Charta klar verurteilen. Er muss eine bessere Gesetzeslage fordern, damit der Imam, der in der Berliner Al-Nur-Moschee zur Ermordung aller zionistischen Juden aufrief, nicht nur eine Einreisegenehmigung nicht mehr erhält, sondern dass er auch vor Gericht gezerrt wird und eine Verurteilung erfährt. Da wird Herr Rabbi Cooper Ihnen noch einiges dazu sagen. Wer das verhindern will, der muss auch die Drohungen und die Hetze von Staatslenkern wie Erdogan, der Israels Vorgänger mit der Shoah gleichsetzt, diese Woche laut und deutlich als antisemitisch verurteilen. Das Gleiche gilt für den alljährlichen Aufmarsch des iranischen Regimes auf dem Berliner Kurfürstendamm, den sogenannten Al-Quds-Tag, zur Befreiung Jerusalems und zur Vernichtung Israels. Dieser antisemitische Aufmarsch muss endlich verboten werden. Das Mid East Freedom Forum Berlin hält es für kontraproduktiv in dieser Bekämpfung des Antisemitismus, wenn deutsche Eliten das Märchen aufgreifen, Israel sei ein Apartheidstaat oder orthodoxen Juden mit islamistischen Selbstmordattentätern vergleichen oder gar gleichsetzen und davon fantasieren, dass Israel die Welt am Gängelband herumführe. Diese intellektuelle Rückendeckung durch Teile der deutschen Eliten gilt es zu kontern, will man in der Bildungsarbeit mit gefederten Jugendlichen nicht von vornherein scheitern. Ich danke Ihnen soweit für Ihre Aufmerksamkeit. And now we may switch to English. And I may ask our guest from LA, Rabbi Abraham Cooper, to address you. And now the floor is yours. And I wish you an interesting statement and a briefing from Rabbi Cooper, from his stay in Berlin and from his wide expertise that he has to offer.
Thank you, Michael, and I want to thank the Middle East Freedom Forum here in Berlin that often has helped give a platform and a multiplier for the concerns and the messages of the Simon Wiesenthal Center. Just briefly, by way of introduction, I came together with Rabbi Marvin Heyer to Los Angeles in 1977 to help found the Simon Wiesenthal Center. I had the honor to know and work with Mr. Wiesenthal for nearly three decades. And I'm old enough to remember when most of our trips meeting with officials was in a city called Bonn, and where you had to be very quick to jump onto these moving elevators from one floor to another. Berlin today is a magnificent city that keeps changing before our eyes. Throughout the course of the summer, Wiesenthal Center officials have been meeting with various governments about the concerns that World Jewry has over anti-Semitism. In July, we had a meeting with French President Hollande at the Elysee, and the main focus of that meeting was at that point the relatively new information, as he told us, that 1,000 French citizens had gone to Syria, 31 had died, a few others who came back who suffered from trauma, but the vast majority of those individuals were trained by ISIS, returned to France, many of them armed, and in the words of the president, French authorities at that point had no idea where most of them were located. The request or the plan for my visit to Berlin preceded Sunday's very important event here of solidarity with the Jewish community in Germany and a statement against anti-Semitism in Europe. I want to first start my remarks by commending and thanking Chancellor Merkel and her government, as well as many other important German personalities who came out to stand in solidarity at this very difficult time with German Jewry and with World Jewry. Commend the Jewish community leadership here as well as the World Jewish Congress for convening that important event. We don't take it for granted because, to be perfectly blunt, I'm not sure there is another European country where, if such an event was convened, that the top echelons of the government would in fact show up. So I say this not only out of respect for the government, but to also contextualize meetings that we had yesterday with the Minister of Justice and with the State Secretary in the Ministry of Interior, Emily Haber. In a few minutes, going to show you a quick PowerPoint. I've already pre-selected one image from it, by the way. Those of you who want to download it, we can take care of that here, or we can email you what we're going to show you on the screen, so not to worry. But yesterday, the Wiesenthal Center urged the German Minister of Justice to issue an arrest warrant for the genocidal hatred expressed by Sheikh Abu Bilal Ismail during his July 18th, 2014 sermon at the Al-Nur Mosque here in Berlin. And I will say for the record, the main reason I asked for these meetings is And many things have happened in the summer involving anti-Semitism in Europe. But I would say that we were quite shocked that someone could come to your city and to this country, which has the strongest anti-hate laws in Europe, get up, preach on a Friday to a congregation, to members of the Muslim community. And as you see his screen capture here from the video that's online, he calls for the annihilation of the Jews. So he came from Denmark, brought in by Muslim leaders who obviously knew that this gentleman is quite an orator, made a genocidal statement in Berlin about Jews, went home. Nothing was done. In fact, at yesterday's meeting with the Minister of Justice, he had not heard of this incident at all when we showed him the same presentation you're going to see. And we only have the screenshots, not the full speech. It's not an incident that was apparently brought to his attention. Later at the meeting with State Secretary, she had read about the incident, she said, but had not known the details. A lot of shocking things have happened and continue to happen with beheadings and horrible headlines that we read from throughout the world. Nonetheless, it's more out of respect for the democratic system that is in place and embedded in your country than anything else that we drew a straight line to senior government officials who want to try to transition from the heartfelt words that were expressed on Sunday by Chancellor Merkel and others into a short, practical list of things that we hope will be done by German authorities to back up the goodwill with specific actions that need to be taken. Some of the other points that I raised at the meetings were the fact that, especially in the early phase of the Hamas-Israel conflict this summer, German police were too often insufficient in their actions, passive, or in some occasion, one occasion in Frankfurt, facilitators on behalf of anti-Israel protesters. There were no actions taken when the flags of terrorist groups were openly displayed, including Hamas and Hezbollah, and those infamous calls for death to Jews in gas chambers made on the streets of this city and elsewhere went unchallenged. And we've asked the German authorities to take a look at what happened in the course of the summer and to take the appropriate steps to better educate and invigorate the law enforcement authorities. We note that for the first time since the Nazi era, a German synagogue was targeted for attack. That took place in Essen, I believe. And thankfully, that attack was stopped before it took place. I believe about 14 people were arrested. But overall, in trying to bring you into the conversations we had yesterday, why we feel it's so important that in the greater scheme of things, this particular Islamist extremist have a warrant put out for his arrest. It is clear that the enemies of peace in this country, people who hate Jews, hate Israel, are, I would say, probing the limits of what it is that Germany will put up with. And based on my meetings yesterday, based on Chancellor Merkel's very strong and positive record, we feel it's very, very important that some specific additional steps be taken. At the meetings yesterday, we outlined three areas that have been, you might say, are the feeding pool of anti-Semitism here in Germany, but also more generally in Europe. And they are, of course, Islamist extremism that is influencing greater numbers of younger people especially here in Germany, but also in France, Belgium, and elsewhere, with the internet playing an increasingly pivotal role in that aspect as well. Number two, of course, we're here, we have to talk about the neo-Nazis, who are about the most explicit group in terms of their hatred and their ideology. The third element is, I think, a relatively newer phenomenon, but one that also needs to be tackled. And we called it mainstream anti-Israelism. Let me be very, very specific. And again, I want to express our gratitude to the University of Bielefeld. They, unlike many others, actually conducted a number of polls going back to 2002, one also in 2011, trying to analyze what's going on in Europe insofar as extremist views inculcating the mainstream. And I'm just going to pull two statistics for your attention, and these were the two that I brought out at yesterday's meetings. In 2011, their poll found that 40% of people in Germany agreed with the statement that Israel is conducting a war of extermination against Palestinians. 2011. It was not a time of an intifada or a particular war going on either with Hezbollah or with Hamas. So we're talking here about an extraordinary figure. And in a 2002 poll taken here in Germany, 51% of those polled here in Germany said that Israel behaves like Nazis against Palestinians. So when you take these kinds of images and imagery, and again, in the context, I want to make it very, very clear so there's no misunderstanding. Israel is a state. In our faith, we don't worship states. No individual and no state is perfect. If you want to know how imperfect Israel is, ask any Israeli, and they will tell you early and often. So my statements today are not about saying that Israel deserves a free moral pass about any particular action it takes. But in terms of the context of how Israel is presented in the mainstream of democracies here in Europe, there is reason to be very, very concerned when, especially in Germany, terms like extermination, like Nazi, are presented in ways in which it's absorbed into the mainstream. It is our belief that these factors do contribute to the overall environment where the bar has been lowered insofar as anti-Semitism. And some of the institutions that should be collectively serving as a red line against bigotry have, through individual statements, essays, comments, actually fueled this kind of mindset. And so when you have these three factors in place before the Hamas-Israel conflict of the summer broke out, I don't think anyone should be surprised by the level of rhetoric that it inspired. So we have, the Wiesenthal Center, based on its analysis of these two polls and other data, and also agree with one expert by the name of Dr. Manfred Gerstenfeld, who estimates that as many as 150 million Europeans harbor similar views. That's a staggering figure. And what we feel in our, what we mentioned yesterday in our discussions, there are a few things that should be put into play here in Germany. First, there needs to be a new study here in Germany to understand the dynamics of these three points. Again, just to try to clarify it, insofar as quantifying incidents, you don't need anybody from Los Angeles to come to the Ministry of Interior and tell them how to count. German authorities are probably the best at giving a snapshot of exactly the incidents that have transpired. So what we're suggesting here is not so much focusing on the figures, but in trying to get some insight as to why the level of anti-Semitism has increased, and why the terminology, the extremist terminology, might say the genocidal terminology of some, has not generated the kind of response that it should. So we're suggesting that that the German government have a put into play a new study that would look into each of the three areas that I mentioned. Secondly, the United States has, for a number of years now, has a special envoy in anti-Semitism. The current special envoy is a man by the name of Ira Forman, F-O-R-M-A-N, and I would say that he's been extremely busy and not been sitting behind a desk. He's traveled throughout the world, including here to Germany, trying to get a handle. He's been to Turkey. And about 10 days ago, this U.S. State Department convened, as far as I know, for the first time in history, a meeting in its building with leading Jewish leaders in the United States, some from Europe and one from Turkey, along with senior State Department officials. And the topic of discussion was anti-Semitism, the spike that's taken place, and what it is that governments in fact, what it is they should and can do. We are urging our sister democracy here to do two things. Number one, to create a special envoy that would report to the chancellor on anti-Semitism here in Germany and across Europe. And secondly, because of the EU's increasingly central role in European life, to also bring that idea before the European Union, and to appoint someone who would have that responsibility. I want to make it clear, since we were involved early on with the European Union and other parts of the incredibly complex European alphabet soup of organizations, we're asking for something that will focus exclusively on anti-Semitism. That is not to the denigration of other problems, such as discrimination against the Roma, Islamophobia, and increasingly the attacks on Christians in societies where they are minorities. And finally, there is one other area, one other venue that we ask for Germany's help. This may sound a little bit strange, but it's about NATO. We need NATO to approach one of its members, Turkey, and the leader of Turkey, Mr. Erdogan, who, together with his key supporters and some of the people in the media who support him, have been using extreme rhetoric insofar as Israel is concerned, and in some cases, a veiled language that has made the historic Jewish community in Turkey, which for 500 years has found safe haven among Turkish citizens, where often they found persecution and worse elsewhere in the world. We need Germany's help to try to put an end to the extreme anti-Israel and sometimes anti-Semitic rhetoric that is emanating from Turkey, and which, among other things, not only makes it very, very hard on the Turkish Jewish minority, it also further fans the flame of intolerance here among Turks who live in Germany. Now, with your permission, if you give me a second here, see if I can figure it out. I want to quickly go through this PowerPoint with you. I'll do this one more time. Excuse me. One of, don't let my ineptitude in technology fool you. 20 years ago, I founded a project at the Wiesenthal Center called Digital Terrorism and Hate. And I often have meetings here with German officials, including at the Ministry of Interior, about trends, what's going on in terms of extremism and the internet. One of the central requests that we've made and will continue to press for is we are urging Germany to convene a meeting, a conversation, a roundtable, whatever you might suggest, which would involve governments, NGOs, and especially the leading social networking companies. President Obama has spoken about degrading ISIS. Every conversation we have now, whether it's with law enforcement or politicians on either side of the Atlantic, the word ISIS is the first word out of anyone's mouth. Well, I don't have any insights about the military and counterterrorism tactics, but I can tell you one thing. Twitter is the weapon of choice, the marketing weapon of choice for ISIS and other terrorist groups. I say this after a number of meetings with Twitter officials at their headquarters, and one of the central points that we're trying to make to not only Germany but to other governments as well, as we cannot solve the problem of the abuse of internet technology, especially the social networking end of the internet, by passing more and more laws. So I just want to make very clear the message that we tried to deliver yesterday. The suggestion that the Wiesenthal Center is making would not impact on anyone's privacy. We are not looking for new draconian laws that would limit democratic values. What we are suggesting and urging is what we've told the companies themselves. Facebook, as you'll see in a moment here, you know, we put out an annual report that gives you an idea of the statistics over 20 years. This is something I always wanted to do since I never did very well in school, and that is put out a report card about somebody else. So in the last few years, we give a letter grade to some of the internet companies. Let me just give you two examples, and because some of the others fall somewhere in between. Facebook. Facebook has stated policies. It has transparency. It actually puts human beings to work. So if you email them with a complaint dealing with terrorism and hate, you will get an answer. It may not be the answer you like, but you will get a response. And most importantly, Twitter now has three teams of their own in-house young experts on three different continents grappling with the issue of digital terrorism and hate. This has nothing to do with governments. This has to do with a company that's doing very nicely, thank you, economically, and that's a world company on the world stage, is not in business to make money off of hate. They have over a billion separate pages. We certainly have our issues with Facebook. They don't always give us the answer we're looking for. But to us, they're the template for a company in the social networking area that's not waiting for legislation to come crashing down, and it's doing its share. Now, with Twitter, I've had two meetings at their headquarters, the last one just a few weeks ago, before the latest beheadings. But it took multiple questions of Twitter to get an answer to the following question. I said, you have a Twitter posting. On the page, or on the posting, is the logo of ISIS. Do you take it off or not? And finally, the answer came, not necessarily, it depends what it says, which means we don't, because there are millions and millions of communications coming out on a daily basis. If we're going to make a collective dent in the war of ideas with ISIS and other terrorist groups, in the marketing domain in which, don't let anybody tell you otherwise, that is one war that they are currently winning. The backbone of their PR strategy is to use Twitter and any YouTube and any other social networking platform that will allow them to operate. So this particular piece of the challenge cannot be solved by fiat from governments, won't be solved by the United Nations, and frankly, won't be totally solved even if we get Twitter to fully cooperate, because there's always another company down the road. So let me just briefly share with you what we shared yesterday at our two meetings. You should recognize this name. This was one of the 1,000 French citizens who came back from Syria. He was the shooter at the Jewish Museum in Brussels earlier this summer. Immediately after the shooting, you had an explosion of activity online, and you can see just two of countless tweets sent out celebrating what it is that he did. And here you also have a Facebook page that was put up almost immediately when he was named. And as you can see at the bottom of the page, as soon as we communicated with Facebook, that came down. If you ask Facebook if there's anything posted by ISIS, does it stay up? And their answer is absolutely not. They do that not because anyone has said you've broken a law. They do it because I think they're just being good citizens. Here are some screen captures, and you can Google this guy's name. There is one version of his speech that is now, I think, subtitled into German. Here you have the very important and authoritative Middle East Monitoring Institute, where they took his YouTube, and you can watch, I think it's about a 4 or 5 minute a sermon. And these are the screenshots. And when this one came up, I think it's safe to say that the state secretary's reaction was, that's genocidal speech. So you don't have to be a lawyer, I think, to figure out that this is a speech that needs to be dealt with. And I think the arrogance and the comfort level of the person who gave the speech, because it's gone viral online, and the people in Germany who invited him with no price to pay for this kind of behavior, this cannot go unanswered. Okay, next, this also was quite surprising to the officials, which I showed yesterday. It's actually started with it's a combination of YouTubes and tweets. And our researchers were following this chain on September 8th. You know, in the States, we invert the date number. So it's September 8th, last week. It's a very typical thing for ISIS, in which you'll have multiple platforms that are used. Usually, like our institution has Twitter, and I think most communication companies have them. You use the Twitter to try to drive the interest, and then you can send them to a website, to YouTube, or some other platform. And this is a direct attempt to recruit young people here in Germany to join ISIS as we speak. And you can see the punchline where he says, we need you now, not when the victory has already come. I think even the language, when you go through this and at your leisure, you'll see that the language is geared really to young people, to give them a sense of purpose. You're needed somewhere else. Come join the struggle. It's just, this is what God wants from you, et cetera, et cetera. I have to say it's rather clever and unfortunately all too successful marketing tactics. And we have other related information in German around 9/11. So, Tilma, this is mostly Twitter, but how many of you have ever heard of Ask FM? I didn't either, but our researchers thankfully have. On the cover of our 2014 report, we put on the logos of these different companies. Ask FM is one of the newer social networking companies, and you could already see that the bad guys know all about Ask FM, and they're all over the map. Here you have another YouTube. I think some of you know about these individuals. Now, how many of you are familiar with the letters VK? Okay, so a couple of folks. It's
the Russian Facebook.
That's correct. The Russian Facebook.
The German media masks.
Everyone, right, everyone is migrating there. So when Facebook or other companies do the right thing, we're not naive. We know there's always going to be other opportunities and other platforms. But I will say this, that when we reach a point that we have the confidence that companies like Twitter and others are doing their best, we're going to get on a plane and go to Moscow. And I won't make any further editorial comments about human rights records or whatever, but the fact of the matter is we need, I think, most people living in civilized societies and most countries concerned about Islamist extremists, and that would include Russia, cannot just take a cavalier attitude and say, well, it doesn't affect the people in young people in our society. It is a global scourge. It's one of those problems in which their old hatreds, after all, the Jews are the oldest minority here in Europe, and there are other minorities that are suffering today as well here on this continent. These are old hatreds with new wrapping, with new marketing strategies. And concerned governments, human rights activists, new kinds of NGOs, and young people themselves, we need to have a consortium or a kind of coalition to marginalize, make it more difficult for the ISIS type of groups in the world to fully, they're the ones who are fully harnessing right now the power of the internet for their own purposes. And we can be doing a much more effective job in fighting that opportunity. This is already an older one. You probably remember this from a few years ago, but I put it up here for the visual quality, for its production quality, and plenty of references or translated materials into German. Just to quickly run through, again, a few selections here on Twitter. And finally, just to come back to the neo-Nazis, they're extremely active. I don't have to tell the people who cover these issues here in Germany. They're extremely active and probably would be calling a press conference or meetings or joint discussions just to talk about their efforts online. But I just have to tell you, they are amateurs compared to what ISIS and the other terrorist groups are at. We have existential threats from the terrorist groups, and obviously we don't have to talk about neo-Nazis, Nazism, severe problems that the revelations have made of over the police's failure over the years to deal fully with the neo-Nazi threat. And here's, again, some more postings. And I put this one up here, or even though it's in French, to again give a little bit of an insight of how do you work on a young person if they're living in France or Germany to get up and go somewhere else. Well, here you see it put into a theological and religious concept, right? It's obligatory for the Muslim to live in a Muslim country. If you're a minority and you feel that you're being mistreated, you have options. One option is come join us. And again, just put here a few examples of what's going on with VK. Again, people here have heard of Time to Hate. I don't have to chew up the clock. But that is a summary of our efforts. Again, I want to thank Michael and his outstanding team for helping make my presentation possible today. I assume that there are going to be questions, and we'll be here for as long as you'd like to raise any of those issues. I will ask and urge the members of the media to please check with the Minister of Justice and to find out if, in fact, they are going to go after the sheikh in Denmark. We certainly hope that they will. Thank you.
Then we're happy to take your questions. Perhaps one formal comment. If you want to have this presentation, please leave me your email or come up after the press conference, and I can send you the presentation Rabbi Cooper just gave. And now we're happy to take your questions. Please start here.
What are the conditions in Germany and Europe which you think are fueling this radicalization?
Well, as I said, I think there are three. Let's talk about focus on Germany. There are three main areas. Number one has to be the Islamist threat and its that ideology's impact, increasing impact within the mainstream of minority communities here, and especially among young people. Let me just step away from Germany for a second. The recent situation in France, where I think they spoke to over 300 imams in France, two publicly came out against the anti-Semitism, one of whom whose life was threatened the next day. So part of the problem is the general, I would call, if you would say, almost disappearance of the moderate voice. We like to believe, and I think most of us do believe, that most Muslims don't embrace this extremist ideology. But if there's clearly an intimidation factor at play in terms of those voices not being heard loudly enough, and again, the marketing aspect, the Islamists make it cool for young people. They dress up their horrific agenda in language and context and marketing vehicles. Could be music as well. Come join us in this holy fight. That's a lot more inviting than struggling to find the future for yourself and to get a job, et cetera, et cetera. So that is clearly one area. Secondly, neo-Nazis, neo-Nazism, again, extremist ideology, it's there. It's part of the price of any democracy. You have hate crimes from neo-Nazis, and I live in California. We usually have somewhere between 1,200 and 1,500 incidents a year. The main target of racist attacks inevitably are blacks, and the first target of religious motivated hatred are against Jews. So every society has its unique aspects. I was came here earlier today walking the cobblestones in front of Humboldt University, incredible history, burning of the books across the street. You can't escape history in Berlin. And the good news is, in the decades I came here, that most people in Germany don't want to escape history. They want to understand it. So I think that's extremely important. But the third piece of it, and it's something that the Middle East Freedom Forum here in Berlin has also been grappling with, is the extreme imagery and language that has attached itself to criticisms of Israel here in Germany. And I think what that does is it lowers the bar for the behavior when a crisis comes. And that means that the voices that we normally would expect would come to the fore to draw a red line. What are those voices? NGOs, talk about My Democracy, maybe less so in Germany, churches, and media personalities. I think that globally, since the UN Conference Against Racism in Durban, South Africa, on the eve of the 9/11 in 2001, saw a rupture in the international community insofar as attitudes towards Israel, meaning I was the spokesman for the Jewish groups. There were 3,900 NGOs. What we saw there for the first time, and we still suffer from this problem, is an attack not about Israeli policies, but an attack on the idea of Israel, on the legitimacy of an Israel. By the way, of the 3,900 NGOs, six showed solidarity with the Jewish groups. All six were from Germany. Okay. But so the elements that would have served as the firewall against this kind of creeping, if you will, or seepage of these kinds of imagery would come from those elements. That is a more global a rupture that the Jewish world has been suffering from. That's not unique, per se, to Germany, but it is a factor. And I think it, in terms of the two factors that maybe made the authorities here not ready for the latest spate that took place, is this a piece of it, and the failure and the failure of those voices, you know, to speak up against that kind of extreme imagery and language. I think it's still something that could be corrected. It won't be easy because partially because this is all happening in real time. And when Israel does something wrong, people have the right to say it, speak it, broadcast it. But I think we do need to find or recapture a vocabulary that makes it clear that the criticism is about policies and not about getting rid of a theological sin called Israel or a colonial mistake called Israel or whatever the language that may be used. And we need allies to reverse that trend, and we need to find those allies among democracies, and especially here in Germany.
Mr. Weinberg?
I'm curious to know about your observations in the protest culture between America and Europe. For example, I went to university at Berkeley, and at Berkeley, where we had many anti-Israel demonstrations, a lot of the Palestinian groups appropriated the language of the anti-war movement in Vietnam, whereas here in Germany, I hear, Jude, Jude, Schweige, Schwein, and a very militaristic kind of march. And I'm curious to hear your perspectives on the differences, because Dearborn also has a big Arab community, and it's hard to say it's because of an immigrant community or not.
No, I don't think it has to do with immigrant communities in the States, per se. Look, I think the big shock, the last time Israel and Hamas went at it in the United States, it was the first time that Americans heard this kind of language at some street demonstrations, but especially on campuses. The latest Israeli-Hamas confrontation took place in the summer. And as a result, even though that round is mercifully over, we pray and hope it will be permanent, it's only starting on U.S. campuses. So at Ohio University, you know, do you have it here in the ALS challenge with the ice bucket here in Germany as well? I'm not volunteering, by the way. I'll write the check. So it's a beautiful thing. It's gone viral. It's gone global. Terrible disease. So the president of the student body at Ohio University, not the big school known as, but Ohio University, decided as a response to the president of the school making the challenge. She had a different challenge. She had a bucket, she said, of blood, and her challenge was to pour the blood over her head in protest to what the Israelis had done to the people in Gaza. In other words, took the medieval blood libel, updated it, probably used tomato juice, I hope for her sake, but it just completely, at the beginning of a school year, just completely destroyed campus peace and tried to create a situation of intimidation. So to report to you from the States is that on the campuses where, and I'll say there are two different groups, there are anti-Israel groups, like BDS, the anti-peace boycott people, I don't think they care about Palestinians. They just hate Israel. They've never done anything to improve the life of a single Palestinian. So among those kinds of groups and activists, they have absorbed whole the language of Hamas. It's no longer about where the borders are going to be between two states. It is embracing the idea that Israel is a racist entity needs to be removed. So the language now being used on North American campuses is generally red hot in terms of the imagery and the rhetoric, matching the Hamas worldview, and has, in terms of a timeline, it's a little bit bizarre because there's a ceasefire in place in the Holy Land and things are only heating up in the States. Insofar as minority communities in the U.S., especially from Arab and Muslim cultures, I don't know if you felt it yet here in Germany, but it's quite actually amazing and tragic. There are, by the count that the Wiesenthal Center uses, 190 million endangered Christians around the world. No more endangered than in places like Iraq, Egypt. I want to talk about Boko Haram a little bit in Africa. So many of the many Arab Christian communities, let's say in the U.S., their main concern right now is not about Palestinians. Their main concern is that their historic religious communities are being erased. They're being genocided, ethnically cleansed in Iraq. You've seen the cover on the Yazidis and coverage on the Yazidis and the others. So there is less, at least for temporarily now, of an exclusive focus on Israel-Palestine in terms of the communities that are represented in the States. But insofar as the activists are concerned, the great tragedy, I believe, for the Palestinian cause is the wholesale embrace by activists and by some of the academics of the narrative of Hamas. It's a big shock to a lot of people, including to a lot of supporters of the Palestinian cause.
Any other questions, please?
Yes.
And if I remember well, they found out every year that there is a certain amount, quite a big amount of people tending to anti-Semitic opinions. And I would like to know whether you have any hope of changing this and how. What do you think?
Well, let me, it's very interesting, but it will give me an opportunity to delay my response by giving you a wonderful short story about Simon Wiesenthal. Simon Wiesenthal, as you know, lost 89 members of his family in the Holocaust. And after World War II, one of the things that I saw and I learned is when I had hair many, many decades ago, was to watch him interplay with young Germans. He made an investment early in the young people in this country. And a lot of Jews didn't like it for a very long time. I saw it myself at airports where young people would come up with little pieces of paper, put it into his hand and said, "My father won't tell me what he did in the war. The name, date of birth, please can you help me?" So he embraced the young people here, and I think he was a symbol. It was a good investment, I think, both ways. Some of you are old enough here to know the name Dan Rather. He was the CBS anchor for decades of the evening news when once upon a time you only had three networks and not 300. So he did an interview with Simon Wiesenthal, and he once asked Mr. Wiesenthal, "Are you an optimist?" So he said, "Dan, I will tell you, I'm a realist. But to be a Jew and a realist, you have to believe in miracles." So that's something I always remembered from Simon Wiesenthal. Look, I think there are a few things. I'm a little bit less concerned, I think I have to, less focused with what is in the heart of an adult than I am with what kind of behavior they're going to exhibit. Young people, it's an open book. You think you still have a chance to try to impact on people. And let me just add here that I commend, again, the government here that's indicated it's going to be continuing to do, you know, outreach and to try to figure out ways to promote tolerance. Our Museum of Tolerance has had 6.5 million people come through in the last 20 years. We're very devoted and dedicated as a teaching institution to these issues. So I think we have to take a dual track collectively, meaning that to fight for the minds and hearts of young people, to make sure that the democracies have the strongest commitment, both in terms of laws and democratic institutions, to fight bigotry when it's expressed. And the other piece of it is for us, and to say it in this location, but I think it's true for every generation, especially of Germans and every generation of Jews, to recognize when we're confronted with evil and to fight evil. Not to talk to evil, but to fight evil. So it's a multi-tiered task. I don't think that realistically we could change the attitudes of adults about what they think about Jews or Roma or immigrants or blacks or Germans, depending on whichever country you might be in. But I think the let's take a lesson from the bad guys. ISIS, the Al-Qaeda types, Al-Shabaab, their entire marketing strategy is for young people. And by the way, they're not fighting for young people on the street. They own the street. They're looking for the kids, like apparently the American kid they got who grew up and went to an Ivy League school and I think is running their social networking outreach right now. We need to fight that fire with fire. We have to be able to come back at young people with values. You know, it's not it's not enough to tell people, don't smoke. That's one way to make sure teenagers want to go immediately after the ad is finished, go out to the bathroom and smoke. Try out what is it my parents and my teachers don't want me to experience. So this represents a collective challenge. And I think you're always going to have, when you come to visit our museum in LA, there are two doors. You get to choose, when you first come into the museum, you get to choose between two doors. There's an introduction by a guy who thinks he's funny on a screen, and he says, okay, now walk through the door of your choice. So one door is green with the word non-prejudice, and the other is red prejudice. So you get to move to either go for the red door or the green door. So I noticed that I went and I took around the advanced team of the Dalai Lama to show them the museum. I saw that one member of his entourage was really uncomfortable. Why? Because anybody with the arrogance to try the green door, it's locked. And a sign comes up and says, think, now use the other door. And what I told him was, what are you worried about? If His Holiness is God, the door will open. When the Dalai Lama came, he made a beeline for the red door. So first and foremost is There are no perfect specimens. We all have our prejudices. Bring your prejudice to the table and our imperfections, and then try to figure out a way, you know, in order to, you know, motivate our young people, you know, do the right thing. I think Winston Churchill is proven every day correct in his statement that democracy is the worst form of government, except for every other form of government. So we have the same in democracies, we have the same huge disappointments, the same scandals, you know, and the influence of you know, the internet, the saturation where there's no pride. We all have those common problems, but the ISIS and the neo-Nazi, you know, between those two, if we don't fill the values void for our kids, there'll always be people out there with other agendas with that can do terrible damage. Yes, sir.
Yes, Mr., please.
I'm sorry. What do you expect exactly from the upcoming OSCE conference against anti-Semitism this year in Berlin?
You know, I always think it's a good thing when you have a public event that can focus on an issue, but you know, we've been at this now for 20 years, and the only way, let's first of all take a look and say, in the real world, we have discovered both in California and in Germany, whether you have minimal laws or maximal laws, you cannot legislate hatred out of existence. So before the internet ever came along, you're always going to have extremists. Now you have the new world, the new reality that we're living in. Again, as an American, first reaction is, don't throw me another law, don't write me another UNESCO protocol, and God forbid, don't go to the UN where Cuba, China, and North Korea have input to the final text. But having said that, we do need government to be aware of what's going on, and we need to trust our kids and empower them. We've come up with some apps at the Wiesenthal Center geared for young people because they're getting the stuff first anyway. So we're trying to empower them more, not to filter more because they get around the filters anyway, but to actually sort of bring the young people into the fold. And the other piece of it is just to pressure the for-profit companies to be a part of the answer on a voluntary basis and not part of the problem that so many of those companies are. So to the extent that, you know, any kind of gathering would focus in these areas, it'll be an important undertaking and an important gathering. But I just want to go back to one central point. If you listen carefully to what I try to report to you is, we trust the German government. We actually respect German democracy. We wouldn't be here otherwise. And what we're saying from a distance a little bit is there is one very important psychological barrier that needs to be overcome. Is Islamophobia real? Yes, it's a real problem. If you think it isn't, I can give you a couple hundred sites on the internet and you can go swimming in that muck if you wish. So it's whether it's in England or France or Germany or the United States, it's kind of difficult to turn to a community that itself is often a target for discrimination, hate speech, and hate crimes, and call them out when extremists within their ranks behave exactly that way. And that is what we need from German authorities. Whatever it is that they're doing to protect all the minorities in Germany should be redoubled, but at the same time, you cannot give, well, you know, I don't know why they didn't go after this imam, but if it's because he was a religious leader speaking from a pulpit in the 21st century with what's going on in the world today, that just doesn't cut it anymore. And so if someone's a bigot and a racist and promoting genocide, then go into your laws and your rules and take the necessary action. It won't be viewed as an attack on a minority community. It should be viewed as standing up for the democratic values of a society, and whether you wear a yarmulke or cover your hair or don't, or a cross, whatever, it doesn't make a difference. There are certain basics that you have to live by and up to, and if you violate them, you're going to find yourself having to deal with the full force of the law. Because if you don't do that, then the forces that are probing will only up the ante. If Germany becomes a place where it's difficult for them to recruit, they'll go elsewhere. If it's a soft target, we're going to have bigger problems here. That's just the way that works.
Thank you very much. I think this was...
One more follow-up? In the same
room. You want
yes,
one?
Please.
Okay.
No, she didn't finish yet. So.
Are you confident that the German government will act on a legal basis, things you ask them to do, and not just make nice speeches, but really do something? And what about other European governments?
So, let me say that... I've now visited Berlin often enough that I actually could recognize half of the pictures on the wall of justice ministers, mostly in recent years women, and very effective. Now you have a token gentleman back there, which is very nice. I think in part, look, what I heard yesterday was from two important addresses that want to do the right thing. They're committed to do the right thing. Will they always succeed in doing the right thing? That's what we're hoping that the people in this room and the media outlets that you represent will press them to act. I think that I'm not a legal expert, but this particular incident is so over the top that I would say that I feel fairly confident that some action will be taken. I hope it will be taken and taken quickly. In France, and I'll just make comment about France because it has the largest Jewish community in Europe. with the current government, which has its own problems, I will say that I'm actually giving the current French government high marks in their efforts to stem the violence, the anti-Semitism, and the terrorism. But France got a very late start on these issues, and it's not clear they're going to be successful. Germany is starting from a different spot, a different location, with many, you know, unique aspects to its issues relating to minorities, and I think that Germany still has the opportunity to get this right. But ISIS and their ilk have really raised the stakes. And we really need a resharpening of the focus of the institutions that are in place. Are there enough anti-hate laws in Germany? Probably. Could it use a little tweaking? We're already sort of experiencing it in the last even few weeks. So I think that the political will generally is there. There are young experts who I've interacted, German experts, who deal with digital terrorism and hate. I won't tell you which agencies they're at, but you can figure it out. The tools are there. The real issue is, will there be enough of a general political and social will to deal with these threats? And in order for that effort to be successful, it means that it has to be a nonpartisan or bipartisan effort of the right and the left. I'm not here to lecture you as an American. We're broke. We're broken. Unfortunately, the current situation in the U.S. is disastrous, and it's reflected in a lot of our social and political problems. But if Germany is going to continue on its generally very positive post-war record, you've got the right laws in place. You've got great collective expertise in many of these areas. And the tools are there for law enforcement. But in order for this to work in a way that will strengthen democracy here, it really needs a push not just from a party in power or just from opposition. It has to be, the collective will has to be found there. And that means that the educational process is not just for young people, it's also for politicians.
With that, I think we close. Thank you for coming. Vielen Dank, dass Sie da waren. Ich hatte angeboten, wer diese PowerPoint haben möchte, soll bitte jetzt hier vorkommen und mir die E-Mail geben, dann kriegt er sie gleich geschickt. Danke fürs Kommen und bis nächsten Mal. Auch im Namen des Simon Wiesenthal Centers vielen Dank, auch für die Kooperation. Thank you for the cooperation with the MFFV. And thanks you for all for being here. Thank you. Bye-bye.
I learned two things. There are two people you never argue with, the barber and the photographer. Yeah. So, I've learned much,
but
that's
Schreiben Sie mir immer, ich bin beschäftigt oder wie auch.
Okay, dann schreiben Sie mir
mal einfach mal was weiter
in der Mail.
Okay. Yes, for sure.
Yeah.
Soon. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anytime. Do you want to have the material?
Yes, I do. Yes.
What was your
MCW?
MCW.